Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
I'm not saying there aren't any of them under that Capitol dome, but it seems fewer and fewer all the time. And I just hope that we can sincerely get back to the America that I saw in that 16, 18 hours on Saturday. That's the country that I want us to be.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Vitrano.
Eight 12 on a hot Monday morning. Great to be back with you after a week away. Thanks for
good
holding
to see
it down.
You.
Yes, good to be here. I did maybe one of the most significant things I've done in my life this last week, and I'm going to share a little bit about that with you. Most of the week was pretty benign.
Golf.
It was like I didn't do anything.
Errands.
Errands. It was a staycation. Had the time. Took the time to run errands, do things.
Did a little bit of work. You texted me a couple of times.
Yeah. Right. Hey, take a look at this.
Some emails and whatnot that you cleaned up through.
You guys make fun of me for that. Like,
it's, yes, I do.
Folks who have the kind of job like we have, and I don't mean media, you have a kind of job where when things don't go away when you're not in the office.
Yeah, that's
right?
The unfortunate thing about PTO. Right.
So a lot of folks handle their time off differently. Some folks just shut it all off. That's fine. I try to do that for periods. But, okay, if you want to come back in today on Monday and have 2,338 emails,
right.
Which I do not, you got to piecemeal that out a little bit. I don't mind it. But the most significant thing of the week was I served as guardian for my father-in-law on an honor flight on Saturday. And I want to share a few things with you all about that. We'll spend one segment on it, and John Mercure was on the flight as well. I'll tell you a little bit more about what he did. He's going to share a lot more about it on his show. I wasn't sure, Eric, how much I wanted to talk about it on the show because this isn't new. This was for Stars and Stripes Honor Flight, which serves this part of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So their 75th mission.
Yep.
So we've been doing this for a lot of years.
And they do it really, really well.
And we've told these wonderful stories, and they're great stories, but, you know, also, with respect to people's time and listening, I don't want to overdo it because this has been around. That said, there were a few things significant that I took away from it that I really felt compelled to share. First, my veteran. So my wife's father passed away about 16 years ago, and her mom is remarried. She married an Air Force guy. Leela Hargue asked me, and what a great honor to be asked to be someone's guardian on an honor flight. Someone said, like, "Oh, you know, if you were to tell someone, you know, who was asked, you know, would you tell them to do it?" I'm like, first of all, you have to. This is your duty.
Right.
You get asked by a veteran to have the honor of taking them on an honor flight, you do it. So I proudly answered that call, but it gave me an opportunity to experience some of the things that he went through and learn more about his military service, but also to see and hear and feel so many different things.
I have with me Skip Meucci. He was in the Army Security Agency.
And my grandpa served here in the U.S. Army Military Police.
I'm here with my granddad, Archie Hewley Jr. He served in the Korean War.
He was stationed in Korea from 1967 to 1969.
He served in Korea and from 1953 to 1955, and he was a demolition specialist.
Yeah.
Everything like that.
Yeah.
What you're hearing there is we get off the plane and board buses at Dulles in Washington, and then we get a police escort off the airport and onto the highway, and then they ask the guardian. So how it works with an honor flight is you have these veterans, and then each one of them has one person who is assigned, and they call them guardians, who take them through the day. And it's my job to serve him through the day. Whatever he needs, make sure we're going. I carry whatever he needs me to carry, you know, all of that stuff. So it's a tremendous honor. But what you heard there is you get on the bus and then they ask all the guardians to get up and just give us a real quick thing on your veteran. Who are you here with today? Mm-hmm. And what did he or she, we did have one female veteran on with us as well. What did those people do in the military? Just give us a little snippet of their story. So I wanted to juxtapose those different stories together just to kind of illustrate for every man and woman who has served, they all have an individual story.
Yep.
what they saw, where they were, what theater they were in, what did they do, what were their jobs. I talked with people who were on the front lines to my father-in-law. He was an intelligence guy, and he worked on, you know, the U-2 spy planes.
Oh, yeah, okay? Sure.
And the SR-71 Blackbird, these reconnaissance planes, they would put them up. You know, that's how the Cuban Missile Crisis started.
Mm-hmm.
The U-2 spy plane saw images in Cuba of these missile sites going up. Well, it's my father-in-law, who was Air Force. His job was, after they developed the film from these overflights, to look at that and say, that's a problem.
He was the one that raised the alarm.
Right. This ain't good.
Call the president.
Yep, right. This isn't good. This isn't good. This is okay over here. That's just whatever. So his job was to identify some of those things. So he did that in Vietnam and in other places as well, served a number of years in Germany. So that was his story. But he's a Vietnam-era vet, and one thing he told me, he said, you know, I got a lot of friends who will not or have not and said they didn't want to come on an honor flight. And he said, I am going to tell all of them that they got to do it. And particularly for these folks from Vietnam, because their reception home, their homecoming was so poor and they were so mistreated. And I believe that's a gift of our generation that we learned from those mistakes. To understand, you can have political differences with why we're at war
or
our conflicts, but you got to separate that out for the men and women who serve, and you appreciate them. And I think what it really resonated with him that, okay, we've done that, and I needed that. And for a lot of these vets from that era in particular, and then Korea as well, because that was the forgotten war, to receive a homecoming, to see people come out and cheer for them and to be treated with such respect, was really important. So I would say one thing I wanted to share with you, if you have a veteran in your life or if you are someone who has served and you have not been on an honor flight or you have anxiety about that, talk to someone who's been on one. And I would highly encourage you to do that. And for a lot of these folks, they talked about how healing it was or just how great it was. And it was really a special experience. Another thing I want to highlight is these volunteers. So there are many different honor flight organizations across the country. Stars and Stripes is the one that we talk about here. John Mercure is on the board of directors there. There's not a paid person, not a paid staffer. Karen Relke is the president of the organization. It's a full-time job.
She's incredible. Incredible.
She does it for free, Eric. Full-time job, and probably more than that. For free. And all of these folks who put together, when you think of the logistics of chartering a flight, setting everything up at Mitchell, flying into Dulles, getting the buses, getting the escort. We're going to go here first and then here and then here.
And getting the food, because there's a lot of food involved.
We were well fed. They told us we would be. Remember, my mother-in-law texted at one point, now, are you having a chance to eat? He's like, I got a bag full of stuff here that I don't know what to do with. So all that coordination that goes in is 100% volunteer-driven, and it's extraordinary. And they do an amazing job. But the last part that really got me choked up, and Mercure's going to talk about this on his show because he talked with Lee, my veteran, and then myself about our experience, and he wants to take folks this afternoon through that process. He catches me after the homecoming at Mitchell, and he had friends and family, and then a lot of folks who aren't connected to anybody there. They're just there to cheer, and you know, the signs and all of that. And having experienced what we experienced in D.C., and the Tomb of the Unknown, and the memorials, and the grandeur of our capital city, and all of that, and then the clockwork with which this all went off, I just was caught up in this emotion. He's like, what's your takeaway? And I almost broke down because, you know, I'm a deeply patriotic person. I love our country. And this was so awesome, what we did and what was done for these veterans. We righted some wrongs. Folks were treated with so much respect and this amazing operation. How can we be doing that so right? And yet I feel like our nation is so broken. And maybe that's the way I feel. Maybe it isn't. But so much disagreement, so much nasty politics, so much divide. And yet this moment of unity in there. And like, which is the America? Are we both? Or are we just talking about the wrong stuff here every day?
Right. Well, I think both can be true. There could be some issues of evil, but also surround. I often will say that there's a lot more love and good in the world than people realize, because we hear those stories too. We see them. Oftentimes, though, unfortunately, they may not get the attention some of the other stuff gets.
Yeah, and I say this to folks all the time too. You know, like, what happens is what happens. And so part of our duty is to report on what happens. And a lot of the divide is coming from the folks who are making the decisions. I looked out on the Capitol Mall. You know, we're on the Lincoln Memorial. You got the Washington Memorial in between, and then the Capitol Dome off in the distance. And I'm like, boy, Wish some of the folks who work inside that building were here with us today.
Right.
Talking to these guys. Serving these folks. And regrounding themselves in what their mission is, other than to explode on TikTok and unload on each other for their political differences. Come back here and see what this is all about. I'm not saying there aren't any of them under that Capitol dome, but it seems fewer and fewer all the time. And I just hope that we can sincerely get back to the America that I saw in that 16, 18 hours on Saturday. That's the country that I want us to be. 8:21 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
You know how on a cigarette pack, you got the Surgeon General warning on there?
Sure. That's
saying like, hey,
been around for a long time.
Yeah, yep, yep. And that took some, you know, they got it on there, and it's a big deal that you can see right on there whether or not
all your tobacco products.
You. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Your Big Red or whatever. Is that what it is? No, not Big Red. What's the guy, the ball player, the kind of ball players you have, the Chew?
Which one? There's a bunch.
Well, there's a bunch. Beach nut.
Anyway.
Do you want me to, why don't you just tell me all the tobacco products?
So the Surgeon General wants more of these warnings. And the Surgeon General wants them for social media.
Dr. Vivek Murthy called for the new warnings in a New York Times opinion piece comparing the public health risk of social media to road fatalities, unsafe planes, or contaminated food. He said there have been inadequate safety measures introduced, and warning labels would send a powerful message to parents that social media has not been proved safe.
That is CBS correspondent Cammie McCormick. A little bit more from her.
Dr. Vivek Murthy says the warning should advise parents that social media platforms could damage the mental health of adolescents. The labels like those on cigarettes and alcohol are one of the most powerful tools available, he says.
So he would need Congress to approve the plan. I'm not sure how it would work yet. What I was trying to figure out from the piece that he wrote was, where would it go exactly? Like, where would you put the warning label?
It could, when you open the app, you could have to click off a
always
screen.
Always have to X
right?
it out.
It comes up, right, yeah. Warning, this is da da da, and then you X that out, and now you're in the app.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's one way, functionally, it could work.
And does that, would that work? Would that have the same ability that, say, the label on the package does? Because if you look at the label on the package, you might look at it and be like, oh, no kidding, it's okay, it is bad for my lungs, yada yada. In this case, are we so trained to just hit X and close right. the window if it were to come up?
Agree
that
to
way.
Our terms of service. I agree. I have read our terms of service.
I've given you all everything. You have complete access to my phone. Here you go.
I think the key difference is there was a period with tobacco where, particularly with smoking, there was misinformation and disinformation
right.
out for so long where it was maybe news to folks who were picking up a pack of cigarettes that, oh, this can hurt you. This is there was
right,
a period.
Yes,
there.
You're right. You're right.
We, our generation, was taught that from the get-go. It's bad for you. It's bad for you. It's bad mm-hmm. for you. Whatever. But there was a period there where this was actually probably news to people. Is there anybody who doesn't know?
Hey,
TikTok's not great for your kid.
I don't know. If that were the case, why are we all? It's obviously highly addictive. Anything you do on your phone
right?
is highly addictive. By the way, they're manufactured that way.
Yes.
They're coded that way intentionally to keep you on it. And your brains can't handle it. I don't know if a little kid or a parent, all parents would know. Otherwise, wouldn't we have more kids not on these apps, not utilizing these devices?
Just because you know something's unhealthy doesn't mean that you can't in moderation use that. I mean, alcohol is a perfect example
right,
of,
good
right,
point.
You know, have a drink, have a couple of drinks, whatever.
Sure.
If you get hammered every night, now you got a problem. Like, so there's
And you're immortal, too, when you're younger. You think you're immortal.
So this is for other. This message is for other people.
And I can burn through this pack of cigarettes without
That's
a problem.
Right. I'm going to live forever anyway.
Yeah.
Or when you're 20. Who wants to live to be 80? Right? I'm good.
So there is something there. It is interesting to see if something like this, at least if it's more exposure, if that can actually get someone to get off of it. I almost wonder if you need to like ramp up the, hey, is it time to get off messaging? Remember Debbie telling us once that she was on TikTok long enough one time where it actually said, hey, you might want to get off the app.
You've been here for a while.
So, you know, do you need to do that? Does that have to come up every 15 minutes versus once an hour? Or I don't even know how
your time elapsed on this particular app is,
right? I mean, you got to think they don't want you off that app ever. Any app. I mean, any app maker wants you on as long as possible.
Convinced my kids have no idea how much time they're spending on that, right?
Well, do you get the little message on Sundays?
Yeah, your screen time was whatever.
Is up or down.
And that's hard because sometimes if you want, you know, if you had a I had a flight, so I was on the phone like the whole time. That's not normally what I do, things like that.
Right.
I don't know. Kids have no idea, though. I've left the room with my kid on TikTok, come back an hour later, and they're still there. And they say, like, do you realize you were here for an hour and you've done nothing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's not just kids. You're right. Adults get addicted to the stuff, too. Do you see the political will to do this?
I do think there Congress does have interest in this type of stuff. It just seems
they've been
like
in
that,
this space.
They
want,
because they've wanted to eliminate TikTok entirely. I mean, they voted on that. It's been signed by the president, that law. So, like, they're clearly interested. But when it affects all apps versus just the one that they targeted in TikTok, will that change their mind and maybe have less political will? We'll see.
You can go ahead and stop texting the different brands of chew and whatever else. Kodiak, Skoll, Redman. Yes, thank you. 8:32 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Beats them. The box office in Hollywood's been much discussed over the last several years since COVID, really, but even before then, but especially this summer, because there's been a lot of concern and question over whether or not movies can really make money again.
At the theater.
At the movie theater, correct. And we've seen some bombs so far this summer. And I said last week when Inside Out was coming out, Inside Out 2, it's the sequel to the original Inside Out. It's a Pixar Disney movie, which has Amy Poehler in it and a bunch of other famous names. And the first one was really good, a very touching movie.
This is the one where it's the little girl and it has the voices
emotions,
inside her head.
Yeah,
right?
Her emotions kind of like struggle with each other and whatnot. It's a phenomenal idea and it's great. Mental health and everything like that. It's a very unique, creative movie. Anyway, they came up with a sequel which has like embarrassment and other anxiety and some other feelings that show up. And I made the point last week to Michelle that who would go see this movie? Not that I don't think it's good, but why wouldn't you just wait until Disney Plus starts streaming it in, you know, a month or whatever?
Right.
And boy, was I wrong.
Blew the doors off.
Yeah.
Huh?
Opening weekend topping the domestic box office with an estimated $155 million, expected to do very well. This is the best opening weekend since Barbie, and it's a Pixar cartoon. Why would that be? Why? What would make this? I mean, was the promotion for this that much better? Was there something else about this movie that got families to go?
It still doesn't answer the reason of why do you go to the theater. But definitely when you have a family-friendly film that speaks to mom and dad but also to kids, not either or, then you know, you're getting a bonus. Every trip to the theater, instead of a couple, it's three or four or five.
The tickets are more. Yep, yep.
Right.
You got seven people going maybe even.
Right. Per visit to the theater, you're probably going to have more participants.
Yeah,
that helps. But it doesn't answer your primary question, though. Why see it? You know, why is this, I have to see it now? Because it's certainly not, I have to see it on the big screen. Right, that's something like when we talk about the Top Guns or some of the other action.
Right.
I got to see this on a huge screen.
Got to hear it. Got to see all the cool shots.
Got to go to the Marcus Super Lux or whatever.
And it could be just the theme of it. I mean, just the first one really did speak to a lot of people about your internal emotions and how they can be hypocritical and fight each other and everything else. Like, and this one adds more layers to that. Perhaps it's even just that.
Just couldn't wait to see it. It speaks to everybody.
Yes, because it speaks to everybody and it makes you feel better.
It's really well done. Yeah,
I'll
see it.
For it. Pixar movies are usually great. The first one was really good, so it would be great to see it do very well.
8:43 coming up next. Former President Donald Trump due in Wisconsin tomorrow. Tell you where and when he is set to speak. That's next. Good program today. Chock full of news and information.
Because you're back.
He looks back at me like, that's all right.
Oh, it's great. Great
like propping up our
great
show.
Stuff, Vince.
Former President Donald Trump, of course, the presumptive GOP nominee for president once again due to visit Racine tomorrow.
I love this state. I love this group of people. I'm talking to you. So far, I've been 92% off teleprompter and 8% on teleprompter.
former president in his last visit to Wisconsin earlier this spring. That was the big rally in Waukesha at the Expo Center there. Did he say it? Didn't he say it? If he did say it, what did he actually mean by saying it? More on that in a second. Let me get you the details first on his visit to Racine. Festival Park is the location. We haven't locked down. Is this indoor or outdoor? We don't know.
I'd imagine
the park, it could be like a huge outdoor rally kind of thing.
Okay.
Unless they have a facility there that they're going to...
It's going to be hot.
So, right, if it is outdoor, and even if you're standing in line to get in, we know the Trump folks turn out early for these things. They make a party of it. And you want to get up close to the stage, folks are in line for hours. So tomorrow's high temperature, 92 degrees. It'll be hot either way. The doors open at 11 on the event. You can get tickets. It's a ticketed event, but they don't charge for them. But you have to have a ticket to get in. They've not said how many tickets are available, but you can register for up to two on any mobile device. So if you're buying them on your phone through the Trump campaign, or not buying them, if you're securing them on your phone, you can get two per mobile device. And the doors open at 11 a.m. The president is due to speak at 3 p.m. tomorrow, Festival Park in Racine. Where did you come to a conclusion? Because I was not here last week when the president allegedly said Milwaukee is a horrible city. Did he say it or didn't he say it?
Well, at the end of Friday, it was that he said it. He said
Okay.
By that point, and that he meant different things than just calling the city horrible. That was his, that was coming from his mouth by the time Friday rolled around.
So here's what he told Fox 6 News on that last week.
I think it was very clear what I meant. I said, we're very concerned with crime. I love Milwaukee. I have great friends in Milwaukee. But it's, as you know, the crime numbers are terrible and we have to be very careful. But I was referring to also the election.
So that's... sounds to me like the president saying, well, yeah, I said it, but this is what I meant by it. Correct?
Sure.
That what you hear in that?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Well, here's a weekend post on a social media platform, Truth Social. Former president now saying this. The Democrats are making up stories that I said Milwaukee is a horrible city. This is false, a complete lie. And he goes on to talk about other things that he says have been untrue, said about him. And he says, I picked Milwaukee. I know it well. It should therefore lead to my winning Wisconsin. Dems come out with this fake story just like all the others. Who would say such a thing with that important state in the balance? Fair point. Vote for Trump, Wisconsin. I will not let you down. So that sounds to me like you say, I didn't say it at all.
Yeah, but everyone else said he said it. Even the congressmen
who were in the room.
In the room said he said it.
And then they said, but what he meant was kind of like what he, I don't know.
He's just bringing it back up again because it stays in the headlines, and I guarantee you it comes up tomorrow.
Yeah, what's he gonna say? They're lying. They said I said Milwaukee was a horrible city. I love Milwaukee.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be something.
It's
like
right
that.
Up the road. I love Milwaukee,
but I love Racine too. Or
I love Racine. Yeah. If they have any storms, he'll say like, "They told me, Mr. President, you maybe shouldn't go, but I came. We have to be there."
I don't know. Did he really say he didn't say it? In that post that you just read, I don't know.
He said, they said,
I'm trying to keep it in the news.
Making up stories that I said Milwaukee is a horrible city. This is false. So I guess you could go and say that he's saying, well, no, I didn't say Milwaukee is a horrible city. Maybe I said those words, but you could play it off the semantics of it. What are we debating?
Have you ever seen the last 8 years? Has anyone? It's the same thing. Did you hear what the mayor responded to it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Donald Trump was talking about things that he thinks are horrible. All of us lived through his presidency, so right back at you, buddy.
Buddy. Okay. I don't know. Does it even matter?
No.
Is there a single person in Wisconsin who was like, I'm going to vote for President Trump, but he said Milwaukee's a horrible city, so now I'm out.
Well, it's right? Interesting, but I would say no. You know, anything he says probably doesn't matter anymore. However, the amount of congressmen, especially who came running in front of a camera or to a phone to, like, discuss this and to throw water on it, I mean, clearly they thought it mattered.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what, if anything, he says about it and what his story is tomorrow. He is due back in Wisconsin. Again, 3 o'clock speech from the former president at Festival Park in Racine. 8:51, Wisconsin's Morning News.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Drake Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. Hot today, hot tomorrow, warm Wednesday and Thursday, and hot again on Friday. That sound about right?
All right, here we are. Summer is here.
What's hot for you? What's your number?
I don't mind the humidity like some people do, so heat index of 100 I could take for a day, 2 days, 3 days, but give that for a week or so, then it starts to get to you a little bit.
But what's your number to call it hot?
Well, like where you
work high temperature out? Of what?
I don't know. 90 something?
Yeah, I think 90. For me, yeah. It's 90. Or but, I suppose 89 feels
but
like
do you,
okay,
right. Are you, can you
I'm not
handle
bothered
it?
By it. Right. Yeah, no, yeah. I'll take it. What, for what we do
I
with
know.
The winter, right?
Yes, I'll jump outside.
And my sports, like the worst time was when I was working at 4 and, you know, you got to wear a suit. Never like being dressed up when it's hot. You're at like a summer wedding or whatever for work. So that's not cool. Sports hot, great. Mm-hmm. Hotter the better. Tennis, golf, whatever, crank it up.
Really?
Crank it up.
You like it that way.
I mean, loose.
Yeah, but, okay.
Loosey.
Sometimes you can cramp up. You can be dehydrated.
Nah.
All right, go get it.
Go after it today. Important, though, if you're someone who definitely has some trouble in the heat, be mindful of that, not to give you the hyperbole that you sometimes get. We aren't going to do a whole bunch of feature stories on wearing light-colored clothes and things, but drink some water, take some breaks, and just be mindful of that. High of 95 degrees today. WTMJ's Political Power Hour with Steve Scafidi up next.